honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by the U.S. Army. Find your place on the Army team at goarmy.com/warriors.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, hearing just a few of the stories from the legendary aviation career of Bill Gillette, 100 years old, of San Jose, California. Originally from Kansas, he told us he went from farming with horses to harnessing the horsepower of a P-51 Mustang. For 59 missions with the 4th Fighter Group in Europe in World War II, he shared some stories about some of his group's legendary aces, but I'm sure you want to hear about some of Bill's most harrowing moments. We're going to get to the day he shot down two German planes on the same mission. But first, Bill, I want to hear about this flight in which the only bullets flying through a hole in your wing were from your own plane.
I'm on a test flight. Deacon Hively became squad commander after Mike Sabansky was shot down on D-Day. Came to me and says, oh, there's two engines to a P-51. The superchargers are different, so the -3 engine would go 4,000 or 5,000 feet higher. It would go to 40,000 feet. He says, I want 4 airplanes. I want you to be one of them. I want them to have a high-altitude engine. And so when these guys come over like this and tease us, we can go up. So they got me a fairly new airplane, somebody hand down. But they had the wrong engine, so they put a new engine in it. And I'm to fly it. Now tomorrow's the day. So they came to me and said, this airplane needs a test top. It's had an engine change, and we can't let it go. And it's evening time. I mean, it's liable to be dark for it, you know. So you have to go up and test the supercharger, and its altitudes are critical. So I went up to 24,000 feet someplace in there. The other one, the supercharger, automatic. You could manually turn it on, but the other one was somewhat lower, and I was all in how they were geared. So I went up to 24,000 feet. This is going to be my airplane. I'd like the airplane to be smooth. Airplanes tell you a lot of things about how they're flying. They say, turn a little more right-rudder. I'm going too fast. I'm going too slow. I mean, and you have to learn what this airplane is telling you. So if it'll go 350 miles an hour and it's not any buffet, so I pointed the airplane back toward home. And I was looking around. So I thought, gee, this airplane is 350. And I looked out here, and here's a little rectangular hole in the top of the right wing. I looked over, and ammunition flying out. And I looked over at the other wing at the same panel. And it went like this, bowed, lifted up vertical here, and took the left horizontal stabilizer off. So I have no elevator. And this is a new experience, too. So I thought, I got to get out and walk. So I bailed out. I have no idea. Probably a lot more I needed to as I watched, because I looked at there. Did I bail out of an airplane before I should have, you know, because it was drifting around? Well, no, I didn't, because these pieces were found on the ground. I landed. A parachute was a cricket field, I think, and a railroad ran along the side of this wind. So my parachute, I went under the wires along the railroad. Parachute went over the top, and I'm hanging there in the railroad about 5 or 6 feet off the ground.
Because the wires got your chute?
Yeah, the wires got the chute. And I thought, now what I do? It's quite a drop, you know. Well, Bobby, which is an armed police in England, didn't carry weapons then. But Bobby came in his car and helped me down. I don't know whether I had gotten down or not. Got the parachute off the wires. Took me to a U.S. Air Force hospital for a physical. And took me back. But that was a totally new experience. I had black eyes. I must have been doing 300 miles an hour when I bailed out. Well, what my crew chief didn't tell me before I got in the airplane is the doors for the ammunition trucks for the guns had an old pretty rough style fastener. They had Zeus screws that stuck up. Well, they changed this panel and changed the fastening or something. The next morning, somebody said, you were second. There's a test pilot had the same thing happen yesterday in the United States. So I don't know, and they never told me what they did. It was like it was classified information, and maybe needed to be, because any report of speed limits would give the Germans more knowledge.
Yeah, because you didn't want the enemy to know of these newfound capabilities. You were hoping to catch them by surprise with your increased speed and range.
Yes, yes. And their speeds were, say, the difference between 400, which I had been to a time or two before. Now, 350 wouldn't cut it. You wouldn't get away, or you wouldn't catch, whichever end of that you were on. If you disabled your airplane, you were in Germany, so you were sure going to be a guest of the Germans.
Well, and just so I'm clear and understand what happened, you're saying you basically shot yourself down because these ammunition holds were not secure. The stuff started flying out, yeah, and it's what destroyed your wings.
Often, and the air flowing over this hole created some kind of suction. And here's 50 caliber shells streaming out. They're on a chain, and they're blowing out into the air. So it didn't get the right stabilizer. But the left one, and I sat around and thought, I wonder if I'd jerked a wheel, some changed the pitch attitude of the airplane, something if I'd have gotten by and brought the airplane home with two holes, and they'd have been able to study whatever remained. I never heard what they did. One mission might be absolutely just fly around. The next mission, there'll be 100 airplanes up there.
Well, and you say sometimes there's 100 airplanes in the sky, and I understand that's the way it was on a day when you got two of your confirmed kills?
Yes, yes. There was two groups of Germans, one on each side, the big one on there, and the bomber in between was about 70, 80 bombers.
So 80 American bombers.
80 American bombers, and probably, I would guess, 50 Germans behind me. I had to turn because people behind you can shoot you and you have no defense. And besides, if I shoot at them, they're the enemy. You disrupt their formation pattern of firepower. So you go head through them. So our tactic generally was to get between the Germans and the bombers and then at some appropriate time, turn.
So you turn right into this wall of German fighters.
Yes. The lead is going, you can see smoke and all the guns.
So you have 50 German fighters over here and another group of German fighters over there, and you're trying to protect these bombers. How'd you get those two, and how do you remember that unfolding?
In the maneuvering around, there's suddenly an airplane right there. Just go. I mean, your thumb's on the trigger, and both of them happened to the flying led us together. One, there was a little film of clouds, and he almost went out of sight, but then a bunch of garbage came out of the cloud.
Well, what does that feel like when you're flying your P-51 straight at more German fighters than you can count?
Well, I had confidence. Probably I don't remember exactly. You know, it's been 70 years. But all I had to do was hit the airplane some, and then that made him change his tactics. But I never got close enough to be mid-air worried, I don't believe, with enemy. Strafing is a different thing because the trees are fixed and the objects you strafe through and stuff like that. Strafing an aerodrome, you play around in the treetops and you go out and go behind a tree so the gunner can't see you over there. And then you go up to where you can see and down and plan each. So you went this way, go this way the next time.
So that was more nerve-wracking for you than air-to-air combat?
Yes. I never got a bullet hole in my airplane while I was flying it. Another pilot flying my airplane, one of them escorted his bombs into the target, which is not recommended. Another guy landed 50 or 60 feet in the air and made it all up. And another guy come in, so I'm now on my fourth airplane. I said, "How's my airplane?" He says, "Your oxygen system is all messed up." "What?" So I go running out to my airplane. I said, "What's going on, Sergeant? See that little hole? There's a hole in the side of the cockpit, and there's a hole in the other side." And then he later told me they got the pilot back in, and they couldn't stick a dowel through the two holes that ran into his tummy. So we figured he's pulling G's, he's doing something, and so you're all pushed out of shape. And but that's how close he came to getting a bullet in his stomach. And it had hit the oxygen tube, which went through right up your front and up to the mask.
What would you say that personally, with regard to your years in the service, what are you most proud of?
Probably this tour, knowing these guys and being able to walk in and sit down and say, "Hi, Jim," and being treated like what I thought was an equal and not, "You're a newcomer." And I know some of them didn't get that treatment. I thought, gee, they act like, you know, it's okay for me to be here. But I think the single most thing is the fact that I developed good enough flying abilities to live with these guys in a time when the war was hectic. 6 weeks or something like that before I joined the 4th Fighter Group with them. They shot down 300 German airplanes. They lost 55. And that's the reason they needed replacements. So, there.
Do you ever look at your 59 missions and say, how did I get through all those? How am I still here?
Several of them. D-Day, for instance, we lost 10 pilots. I didn't see a German airplane. I had no idea what I was going to do until I just followed these guys. And I presume God gave me the ability to fly and see some of these things that others didn't, or I'd have made mistakes that others made.
You say God gave you the ability. Did you ever feel like God was protecting you up there?
Yes. And it would not be uncommon for somebody in briefing in the intelligence room to say, "God, I know where I am. I can get home, go help somebody else." I mean, if they can feel that way, I can feel that way. And that had been a wondering point for me as we were doing this flying. My going to church and being a Christian, what's that going to do? How's the war going to look at this or anything? And other guys, I mean, I was amazed when I was sitting there and we were talking about something, and Shoki or somebody said, I just kept up and said, "God, I could see England go help somebody else for a while."
Well, and you're 100 years old now, but you're still driving and you're still golfing. A lot easier to shoot your age when you're 100, I'm sure. What keeps you going? What's your secret?
Well, part of it is I try to keep going. There are days when I think, gosh, I don't even want to get out of bed. Good genes, I'm sure, are part of it. My dad had two sisters who lived past 100. Beyond that, I don't know, but I think there is a supreme being. I don't know, we're getting to be so many of us, how he can take care of everybody anymore.
Well, aren't we thankful he's still taking care of Bill Gillette, 100 years old and closing in on 101. As you might imagine, with such a distinguished career, Bill had a few stories that wouldn't quite fit into our radio time today, but I do have them bonused in for you as part of the podcast version at hometownheroesradio.com, where you'll also find some photos of this amazing aviator. One more note, you may have noticed we have a new sponsor helping to make this program possible. I'm very excited to partner with the U.S. Army, and of course we're thankful for our men and women in uniform today, who, just like those we hear from on this program, are willing to put their lives on the line for the rest of us. Some people see the challenge and say, "Send me." Some hear it can't be done and say, "I'll do it." Some choose to stand for something bigger than us all. If you're ready to step forward and do your part, then you might be ready to become a soldier in the U.S. Army. It's a diverse team that works together, trains hard, and adapts every day to be ready for anything that comes next. The U.S. Army turns soldiers into leaders capable of split-second decisions, extreme focus, and maximum endurance. These warriors lead their squads on missions armed with more than good intentions. They inspire their fellow soldiers to do better on and off the battlefield, making the Army a lethal and ready force. U.S. Army soldiers blaze a trail that leads to freedom. If you think you have what it takes, you should find your place on the team. If you live in Central California like I do, you can call 559-323-1099 to talk to an Army career counselor. And of course, wherever you're listening today, you can contact your local Army recruiter or visit goarmy.com/warriors. Thanks so much for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by the U.S. Army, building a new generation of leaders at goarmy.com/warriors.